and began trudging down the arroyo. Dog and Suds lingered behind. When Ryan made a move to open the passenger side door, Dog jammed the bore of the rifle into his spine.
You walk with us. Your pals are less apt to get nervy with their blasters if you're on the road with us.
The rifle barrel prodded Ryan's kidney, and whirling quickly, he backfisted the length of steel away.
Back off, friend.
Dog lunged forward, swinging the rifle, trying to shatter Ryan's profile with the wood grain stock. The one-eyed warrior dropped to the ground, knocking his adversary's legs out from under him with a swift leg sweep. Springing erect, Ryan put the bore of the Sig Sauer on Suds and booted Dog beneath the chin with his right foot. Phil was staring at him. His grin had been replaced by an O of surprise. He looked at Dog, dazed and twitching in the dust.
I hope you didn't kill him.
No. I'm riding into Hellskell in my wag with my people, with Zadfrak. You three will lead us. You try to run, you try to lead us into an ambush, I'll put 6 bullets along the buttons of your spine. Acceptable?
Phil nodded. He and Suds helped the groggy Dog to his feet. Ryan climbed into the wag.
Well, I guess we've been formally welcomed.
After less than a mile, the arroyo opened into a wide, flat plain with cultivated fields. The crops were wheat, corn, and beans. Beyond the fields was Hellskell. The overall design of the place was a confusing mishmash of architecture. Circus tents, geodesic domes, Quonset huts, and lean-tos. The main part of the ville looked like a standing set from an old Hollywood Western vid. The wag wheeled up the main thoroughfare, following Phil, Dog, and Suds. Hellskell was one great open market, where nearly anything could be bought or sold. Shops and stalls were brightly painted. Vendors and jolt merchants lined the street. Men and women on motorcycles rode up and down, back and forth along the ville, throwing choking clouds of dust into the air. Ryan noted that all the cycles looked new, with fresh paint and highly polished chrome. A large number of people sporting X's on their foreheads wandered everywhere. A curious conglomeration of all races and ages, dressed and undressed in every imaginable fashion. A few men sporting shaven pates and the X-scars trooped about. They wore mirrored sunglasses, carried compact Tech-10 machine pistols, and wore gray corduroy vests decorated with hanks of human hair. They might as well have carried signs labeling them as sec men. Most people on the street shuffled, stumbled, or lay about, busily doing whatever occurred to them at the moment. One girl, completely naked except for looping whorls of blue paint, danced alone atop the rusting wheelless husk of an old wag, moving in time to the soundless music of invisible instruments. The hot metal of the roof had to have been burning her bare feet, but she didn't seem to notice.
The bastard spawn of the pre-dark.
Lilies of the field. They toil not, neither do they spin.
Zadfrak, on the floor of the Land Rover, was completely unconscious. The dusty avenue went past hovel and tent and crude shack until it opened in a large central square. Phil stopped in the middle of the street and pointed to a 3-story wooden frame structure, the only building in the square. Ryan got out of the Land Rover and approached Phil.
The Patriarch needs to look you over before any other business gets done.
Your man needs medical attention.
That can wait. Gotta make sure you fit in.
Ryan gave the high sign to JB, who pulled over to the side of the road. Everyone disembarked, JB making a very exaggerated show of pocketing the ignition key. Even if a thief cracked the steering column in an attempt to hotwire the wag, an electric circuit was connected to a small but frightfully destructive package of plastic explosive inside the firewall. Phil gestured toward the batwing doors, and Ryan led his party inside. If it hadn't been for the electric light fixtures and silent glowing jukebox in the far corner, the saloon might have been mistaken for a watering hole of 200 years earlier. The bar top, the tables, and the floor were exceptionally clean, and brass footrails and spittoons gleamed with a high polish. Mildred, standing beside Ryan, suddenly froze.
Oh my God, the family! Hellskell! I should have been able to put the pieces together. Zadfrak wasn't talking about man's son's country. He meant Manson's country.
What do you mean?
Charles M. Manson. Look.
Following her pointing finger, they gazed at a huge mural mounted on the wall behind the bar. It depicted in gold and brown Charlie Manson's final ascent into heaven, amid joyous welcome from angels above and remorse from the deluded souls below. The deluded souls had human bodies, but their heads were those of swine. Near the top of the mural stood a representation of God, smiling beatifically as he beckoned his second only begotten son with widespread arms.
Blasphemy!
Who the hell is Charles Manson?
Our spiritual savior. He who shaped Deathlands into the image of paradise he foresaw over a century ago.
The vision of the mural had taken everyone aback for a moment, so they hadn't immediately noticed the man sitting against the north wall. He was a vision, almost as startling as the mural. The man's body was lanky and very thin. Beneath a thick shock of upstanding jet-black hair rose a remarkably high forehead. It was impossible to gauge his age. He had one of those smooth, unlined faces that would always look the same between the ages of 25 and 65. His eyes were in shadow, but there was something, some force swimming in them that raised the fine hairs on Ryan's nape. It was a spark of self-centered dedication to a single goal, a single-minded drive to attain an inexplicable objective. The man's hands were very long, and he had them steepled before his pursed mouth. He was dressed completely in white. White blazer, white shirt, white tie, white trousers and shoes. There wasn't a single speck of color anywhere on him. He was sitting in a large, fan-backed wicker chair.
Shades of Somerset Maugham.
Phil stepped up to the white-suited man, ducked his head, and whispered something into his ear. Ryan approached the chair, and the man suddenly waved a hand.
Far enough, kindly. You're covered with road dust and exude a frightful odor.
If I'd known we'd be meeting, I'd have bathed in rose water and disinfectant.
You've an intrusive tongue. Did I ask you a question? No. But no matter. Phil tells me your name is Cawdor.
That's true.
Ryan Cawdor, I presume?
Yeah.
He tells me you've brought Zadfrak back to us.
True again.
Why?
Because he asked us. He's sick.
I know that, Ryan Cawdor. I also know that I cast Zadfrak out of the family. I disowned him, stripped him of his rights, and set him loose in Deathlands to die. Returning him here is a great affront.
Zadfrak didn't mention that. We owed him a debt, and he wanted to be returned to Hellskell. That's all there is to it.
I don't think I believe you. I think you came here to make mischief.
Is that right?
There could be no other reason.
At the sudden sound behind him, Ryan spun, his hand darting to his weapon. He saw that the entire wall backing the jukebox had swiveled open, disgorging seven of the shaven-headed X-Guard men, all aiming large-caliber handguns. Some were automatics, some were revolvers, but all looked brand new. The cold tip of a gun touched the back of Ryan's neck. The thin man held up one narrow hand.
No, no. That bloodies the floor, much as you'd enjoy it. There are other ways.
The white-clad man stared at Ryan with shadow-pooled eyes. Ryan's mind sensed a whispering touch, like an invisible, wispy cobweb brushing him with ectoplasmic tentacles. His heart began to pound. The man was a psionic, a line-of-sight telepath. He wasn't necessarily a mutie, but norms with true telepathic abilities were extremely rare. Extrasensory and precognitive perceptions were the most typical abilities possessed by muties, who appeared to be normal. The vague touch disappeared. The man in the white suit suddenly stiffened, and Ryan guessed that the mind probe had been directed at Christie and met unexpected resistance.
Your woman is a telepath? No, an empath, a doomseer. But with formidable abilities.
You're not so unique after all.
Very true. My name is Lars Hellstrom. Sorry about the coldness of the reception, but we can't be too careful with all the anarchist crazies and night-creeping Indians running loose these days.
I agree.
The pressure of the gun bore was still against the back of Ryan's neck, and he considered disarming the bastard, but Hellstrom raised a languid hand.
Hold on that, Fleur. I've scanned him. He's not an enemy.